a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery. Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. Thanks for hanging out with us. Yes, welcome to your Monday, and welcome to some snow in the higher elevations, and it almost being July. So here we
are. Yeah, that sounds about like 2020.
I like it. I know. Fires this weekend. Fire and ice.
That's
I was glad to
is.
See that a lot. When I saw 3,100 houses were being evacuated yesterday in Saratoga Springs, I was like, that is insane.
Well, one fire was on the other side of the mountain from
me. And then
me.
They had another. Yes, and then you had. So I know that 2020 feels bleak, but there is some hope because the NBA season is going to be returning. That's how we're going to start the show off this evening. In our 8:05 cut, Ben Anderson is going to join us here. Here we go.
The cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, so Ben Anderson, Jazz insider for KSLSports.com, giving us the inside look as for the Jazz's. What are these? What do they call this? These are the seeding games, those eight games that they play before the playoffs actually start up. Is there a chance that the Jazz could lose so
it's
much?
It's pool play.
It's pool play?
Yes.
It's like the World Cup round.
Yes, it's pool play.
Is there a chance that the Jazz could actually like go 0-8 and not make the playoffs then, Ben? How does this work?
No, the Jazz have locked in a playoff.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Six games left, and what, they're 9.5 games ahead of the ninth place team. So,
okay.
So they could be.
Number is done.
Yeah, so they could be number two. As high as 2 and as low as 7.
Okay, that's
is that correct?
That's as bad as it could be.
They can't even fall to 8, so that's a good sign. They're not going to be playing the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs.
No,
that's good.
No matter how hard they try, they can't fall to 8.
Okay, so you saw the schedule come out over the weekend, just right Friday afternoon, and I wanted to chat with you about what the schedule looks like versus what fans can expect. And so you're looking at the Pelicans in Game 1. That's going to be July 30th, and then it's going to go very next day. Or no, I guess 2 days from then, August 1st, they go Oklahoma City Thunder, the Lakers, the Grizzlies, the Spurs, the Nuggets, the Mavericks, and the Spurs again. Those are their eight seeding games. So is there such a thing as a strength of schedule, as we actually have no clue how strong teams are at this point anyway, so there's no point in making a strength of schedule?
Yeah, I think that's, and I'm actually working through that kind of right now for an article I've got coming out tonight or a little bit earlier, that we don't know what these teams are going to look like necessarily. And then and I say that because, Malcolm Brogdon for the Indiana Pacers, their best guard, is not going to be coming back to play the remainder of the season. He just doesn't feel safe coming back. Bojan Bogdanovic isn't coming back for the Jazz. There's issues like that, players like that that we're not going to see. LaMarcus Aldridge for the Spurs. So that's going to be one major issue, is the teams are going to be missing key rotation players, starters, and in some cases, all-stars. On top of that, we don't know who and which teams are, how they're approaching this return. Are the Phoenix Suns just looking at it purely as an opportunity to get DeAndre Ayton and some of their younger players as much playing time as possible in games that really don't matter when they've had 3.5 months rest and they're going to feel better? Or are they really trying to say, hey, let's get better as a full team? And then likewise, the Lakers with a five-game advantage or the Milwaukee Bucks who have locked up the first seed in the East, do they play anyone or do they try and go into the postseason 100% healthy, completely rested, and try and burn everybody with really only, you know, one or two serious games under their belt? Those are the questions that I think are difficult, and the strategy could be different for all 22 teams.
So we know Boyan is not going to play because of an injury, but there's a significant group, or at least some players who just said, I don't want to do this, I don't feel safe, whatever reason. Is that kind of the consensus, and why is it that people aren't feeling safe?
I do think there's still a push for people feeling that it's a distraction from the protests that are going on across the country. And there's been several players that have talked about that. That Fred VanVleet earlier today from the Toronto Raptors said, you know what, it feels wrong. It's crappy. I don't want to do it. I also don't want to give money back. I think that money can be used positively. I think it can help a lot of people. And it's just torn, and it's a lose-lose situation, and this is the choice we're going to make. It's better than losing the money and not playing the season. You know, I think that's the big push of why some people aren't coming back. I know there are different reasons. Trevor Ariza has custody of his son during the month that he's supposed to come back for the Portland Trailblazers. That's keeping him out. And you know, that's something to focus on. Scott, I'm sure when you were in the NFL, you had off-season things that you had to do. It was important time, and if someone asked you to, you know, take away from that, you know, that was your only break. That was your only time off to see family or do specific things non-related to your job. And I think you are seeing NBA players who are saying, hey, I can't sacrifice this right now, especially with coronavirus still in the background.
You know, I know that sounds like, oh, come on, you guys are these athletes and, you know, suck it up and, you know, you have all the money in the world.
Yeah, everybody,
and all that
it's
stuff.
Easy. It's easy for people who don't have a lot of money to go, give me that money.
Yeah, you just know? Play for a month. But there really is a thing to having balance in your life, and you need that time to re-energize yourself. The season isn't as a physical; it's a mental, it's an emotional grind, and then I hadn't even thought about the family situation with Trevor Ariza. I mean, that's, you know, he absolutely should do that, and that should be a priority over anything that he does. I didn't realize. What team has the most to gain from having this back? I mean, is it a team that maybe is, you know, could make a run in the playoffs, or is it a team like, you know, does it validate a guy like LeBron James? What team benefits the most from having the playoffs and having this NBA season finish out?
So I'll break this down in two ways. I say there's two players specifically who have the most to gain, and I'll say that's LeBron James and his opportunity to lead the Lakers to his fourth championship, his fourth ring, which, you know, he's lost a bunch of championships already. He's got three. It's not like we're debating whether or not he's one of the greatest of all time. He's either one or two, and I don't think, unless he can win five championships before the end of his career, that he can, you know, overtake Michael Jordan with zero question. I don't know if that's in the realm of possibility, but it does further his legend. It does kind of re-give him the title of the best player in the NBA today. And at his age, that's a remarkable thing. The next most important player, or equally important, is Giannis Antetokounmpo. The window to win a championship is so small. He is the best player in the NBA right now. At least he's been the most effective this season. He's going to win the MVP, I think, for a second consecutive year. So there's a ton riding on that. He can establish his legacy as an all-time great by winning a championship this season, and he may not be able to do it in future years. That, you know, the Bucks are just going to have to break up parts of their roster, and that's going to be tough. And then for an actual team, I think the New Orleans Pelicans probably have a ton to play for because they have the number one overall pick in Zion Williamson, because they've got a really talented young roster, because they're going to give Brandon Ingram, you know, a superman or a max contract this offseason. If they can make the playoffs and feel like they have the best young roster in the league, that's a huge plus for them. And the NBA wants that as well. So I think those are the three different items, one team and two people that I would focus on.
31 days from the NBA season getting underway, and so July 30th, the Jazz are going to be tipping off against the Pelicans. Is there a best-case scenario matchup for the playoffs, or do we just not know enough about these teams and where they're at mentally, physically, and everything going? And certainly not knowing by...
Rosters.
Well, yeah. I mean, the rosters are going to be absolute giant question marks. You know some people are going to get sick during all of this, and I guess we're just wondering... I mean, just from it, if everything kind of stayed the same, what would the best matchup for the Jazz be going into the playoffs?
I'll say the worst, obviously, first is the Houston Rockets. The Jazz just can't figure out what Mike D'Antoni does.
Yeah.
So, and it's boring. I don't want to watch Russell Westbrook again. I don't want to watch James Harden.
I was happy to see that map. I was happy to see the what fan bases hate people the most across the U.S. And it was LeBron, and it was mostly LeBron. And then our just little space in Utah had a big James Harden beard in the middle of it. And I was like, I'm so proud of our Utah fan base because we can't figure out the beard.
So I think that's the worst matchup. And I think Jazz fans, I hope for Jazz fans, they don't have to watch it. I also want to see the Jazz play for a long time. I think that's, you know, it's good locally. It's fun to cover. Selfishly, I would like to see them advance through the playoffs, so I don't want to see them with a bad first-round matchup. So in that sense, I guess the two teams I would focus on probably ideally would be the Dallas Mavericks. Now, currently the Mavericks sit in the seventh seed. I think it's going to be tough for them to climb up to the sixth, and I think it's really hard for the Jazz to climb up to the second. So finding that matchup is somewhat tricky. I don't know if the Jazz can get there. And then I will say the Oklahoma City Thunder. Though the Jazz actually haven't played the Thunder all that well this season, I do think we've seen Rudy Gobert have a lot of success against Steven Adams in the playoff. We know they won that series a couple of years ago. Chris Paul has been hard for the Jazz. He's going to continue to be hard for the Jazz. But I think that's maybe the least talented roster the Jazz could potentially go up against in the first round.
Let's take a quick break when we come back. Ben Anderson still joins us here on KSL's Unrivaled. We're going to talk a little bit about how the health of the Jazz roster is right now. You saw reports about Rudy Gobert still having a hard time with one of the symptoms of his taste not necessarily coming back all the way or not recovering 100% from that. What about the Jazz health overall? Of course, Boyan's out, but what else is in question for the Jazz's health going into their seeding games starting on July 30th? Stay with us. Ben Anderson is going to right here on KSL's Unrivaled and KSL News Radio. Welcome back. Thanks for being with us. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Scott, fresh off a fishing trip. Did you catch anything?
Caught a cold. I'm of course I caught something.
Don't bring it into the office, okay? Would you, buddy? Thanks.
Of course, I caught fish.
Here's the deal. Scott always catches fish. And now it's bad because we'll take our... So we went fishing just in this garbage... I won't say garbage. I won't name it either. But it's a tiny pond. But once you go out and catch salmon with Scott Mitchell, then my kids go, where are the salmon at, Dad? And I'm like, they don't have them in this one. So my kids were relegated to kayaking around.
So they're like, why are we going here?
They found a dead catfish, and they put it in their little kayak, and I went, you got it. You caught your fish. Successful trip. That's the kind of stuff. Those are the fishing trips we have as the Keery family. So there you go. Ben Anderson, Jazz Insider for KSLSports.com, joining us right now on Unrivaled. And as the season is about to get underway, fingers crossed, a month away, what's worse? I mean, how do you see this thing not happening then, Ben? Or is just the NBA figuring out, hey, we know we're going to have some bumps along the way. We're still going to start July 30th?
I think, you know, the Florida cases are obviously very scary. Actually, the NBA does get a little bit of a test run, and we're doing this with the Canadian team, which is kind of funny, of how this bubble is going to work, because Toronto is not open. So the Raptors aren't allowed to reassemble and work out in Toronto.
Right.
So they're going to Florida starting
early.
The 1st. They're going on Wednesday to start their whole training camp, and so they're going to be there while the rest of the NBA teams are gathering in their host cities.
They're the canary in the well there.
They're like Mikey.
Exactly.
Let's get Mikey to try it. He likes anything. We'll send him to Florida.
Hey, he likes it.
That's what the Raptors are going to do. If that's safe, if it feels like they can keep them safe for the first week, there's not outside interaction, they kind of get, you know, they in a small control group, that's actually probably going to be helpful, and I think that will prevent further shutdown for the NBA.
What's the best starting five for the Jazz? I know we were talking last week about the possibilities of some team or of some, you know, combination, I think, of what they're, you know, we could look at some of these advanced metrics and you've done that deep dive. If you go to KSLSports.com, you can look and see the Jazz's best starting lineups kind of per the numbers. But what do you like best? What's the best group of five that the Jazz put on the floor per what you see?
Yeah, here's what's kind of funny is that since Bogdan Bogdanovich isn't coming back, and he started all but one of the Jazz games this year, he missed that second game against the Lakers with a rolled ankle.
Yeah.
The guy who replaced him was Jeff Green. So the Jazz are going to be starting a brand new starting lineup when they get to Orlando. So that's going to be different. That's going to be new, and Quinn Snyder's got to figure out what that group looks like. Now, this year so far, what we've seen is the best group is still, and we have to assume that Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, and Rudy Gobert are going to be the starters. I still think that's going to be the case. I think it's safe to assume that. Then I think what you're going to see is the Jazz bring in Royce O'Neal and Joe Ingles to fill in. And that's actually been a good roster this year. That unit, they've only played 14 minutes together. Yes, that's a very small number.
It's like the best 14 minutes we've ever seen. It's amazing.
But they're, you know, yeah, they're outscoring the opponent by 21 points, over 100 possessions when that's when they're on the floor together. Now, that's significant because in the playoffs, you might double the number of minutes this season that that team has, that group has played together, because they will probably play the first 6 or 7 minutes of the starting of the first quarter, and then again of the third quarter, and they may close the game together. So that's how you're going to see that number grow. And Quinn Snyder having some of that group, even without Bojan Bogdanović, is pretty promising. And then you're going to really have to hope that either Joe or Royce O'Neal are hot, like they were in the middle stretch of the season, where those guys just couldn't miss.
So Bojan is a big loss for the team. How do you replace him? Do you do it? You know, other guys step up, they get more minutes, or is there the possibility of the Jazz looking outside and signing someone to replace him?
So you're seeing a lot of moves right now across the NBA of teams signing available free agents. The Lakers today signed J.R. Smith because he could have signed a contract this year. He didn't, but he did sign somewhere. We are going to see those deals and those players get picked up. And the Jazz actually have an open roster spot because Bojan Bogdanović is injured and isn't traveling to Orlando. They can sign somebody outright to replace him, like a Jamal Crawford type, if they wanted to. Or they could promote Jarrell Brantley or Justin Wright Foreman, who are both on two-way contracts for the Jazz this season, make them a full-time contract member, probably extend them into next season with a non-guaranteed deal, and then sign another two-way player to replace them. And I actually think that might be the most realistic option the Jazz take.
Why? Just because it's cheaper, or what?
If you sign a real free agent, that guy might expect to play. You can sign a two-way player and say, you know what, we really believe in Jarrell Brantley. He's had a terrific season with the Stars this year. They had the best record in the Western Conference. We want him around. We're going to keep him around by giving him this extension, and then we'll sign a two-way player just to give us more flexibility, and it is probably cheaper.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't like, and you know, just as a guy who's followed the Jazz for so long, just hearing the name Jamal Crawford in a Jazz uniform, somehow he would still beat the Jazz, even in the Jazz uniform.
Even if he's playing.
I don't know if I feel comfortable with that 100%. Ben, how's Rudy feeling? I know the stories have come out of him still having trouble with his sense of smell coming back, and that's obviously one of the big indicators that became sort of some flagship symptoms for some people, where it's like, no, this is different from everything else. If you're not tasting or not smelling, that's kind of a big indicator that you might have COVID-19. So how's Rudy's health? How's the team's health overall?
It sounds like the team is healthy. It sounds like everyone's going to be traveling. Yes, Rudy Gobert still doesn't have his smell back, and I'm not an ear, nose, and throat doctor. So I don't know if not being able to smell is a gland problem or if it's a breathing problem. I don't know what causes that, obviously. I would think if it was indicating that there was a breathing problem, there's just absolutely no way he would come back and play, and that's certainly not the case. By all accounts, he's going to be with the Jazz in Orlando and ready to go. And we should be able to talk to him this week. I think starting on the 1st, the Jazz are going to start making players available to the media after they're doing their individual workouts. And my understanding is Rudy is going to be one of those players. So he's playing, he's healthy, he's ready. He just doesn't have that detail back. And it's still weird. It's still scary. It's still early in this virus. We just don't know what all these things mean. And, you know, the people who know the least about it are the non-doctors, which is basically everybody. So I think that's the hard part about figuring out, hey, well, is a symptom concerning, or is it just, you know, a side effect that we don't need to worry about? What we can progress forward thinking, though, is that we know Rudy Gobert is going to be with the Jazz.
So knowing all that you know and trying to figure this out, what's your gut tell you about the Jazz in this playoffs? Where do you think they're going to end up with all of this?
I think it's going to be hard for the Thunder and the Rockets to catch them. I mean, I know the Jazz do not have a significant lead. They're never all that far ahead of a team. I think they're a game and a half up on both the Thunder and the Rockets right now. The Jazz have a record of 41-23. The Thunder and the Rockets are both 40-24. So the Jazz are just one full game ahead of them. But really, one game's a lot over an 8-game stretch to make up. You have to win an additional game on top of the Jazz loss to overtake them. And that's hard to do. Now, the Rockets do own the tiebreaker. There's some issues there. But I do think, you look at the strength of schedule that we've talked about, the Rockets have a tough schedule, the Thunder have a tough schedule remaining. It's hard to make up games in that final stretch when everyone's playing hard and taking it seriously. So I would project the Jazz to finish 4th not that they're going to have a home court advantage, but then they have to hope that the Thunder can fend off the Rockets and kind of lock up that five spot.
Are the yellow jerseys traveling to Orlando with the Jazz?
It doesn't sound like it. And honestly,
thank
I know
heavens.
The players really hated the yellow jerseys. It wasn't just fan stuff. The players are far more superstitious than fans. Scott, I'm sure you know that.
I know nothing about that at all.
Scott's got where he's got like 10 pennies in both shoes right now just for the radio show.
So I don't believe the yellow jerseys are traveling.
Thank goodness.
You're going to see the home, the road, and probably the alternate multicolored where city.
Oh, the gradient. The gradient jerseys, which is the last season of them, so you might as well use them. And fans tend to like that one pretty well. All right, he's Ben Anderson. You can see his byline on KSLSports.com, and you can also hear him periodically on our program. Anything that comes down with the Jazz, we love to get Ben on to comment on it. And so with the schedule out, with all these things going on, and whether or not the season is going to go on or not, and everybody crossing their fingers that when July 30th hits, we're going to be seeing the Jazz versus the Pelicans. Ben, thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll talk to you again soon, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Taking the break here, we'll come back. We got more to go. We've got Scott seeing a very interesting documentary over the weekend on Netflix about Athlete A and the sexual abuse that went on in USA Gymnastics for so long with Larry Nassar. We've got more to talk about winning at any cost. And those costs are high, high in many cases. Stay right here with us. It is KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us. Back in another week, back at it. Scott Mitchell back in studio. What's going on, Scott? Did you enjoy your Friday off? Everything?
It was a nice Friday off. Thank you very much.
There you go. Well,
did you enjoy your Friday on?
I loved it. Mitch Harper came in and
good for Mitch.
Your stead. So Mitch and I had a good time. You know what? I like you so much, I'm going to give you this Friday off too. All right.
What?
It is a company holiday,
wow.
So I technically don't have a choice. But going into the 4th of July weekend, and of course, it's raining in like 60 degrees at my house, and there's snow in the hills above my house.
I got a report today. It snowed at Old Faithful.
Did it really?
Yes.
My son was so mad. I have two July babies in my family, and they're both like, they're looking, my oldest July baby, he's going to be 10 this year, and he goes, Dad, if it snows on my birthday, that's going to be the worst birthday that's ever happened. I was like, could be the most amazing one, you know? But I was like, you know, normally something we would laugh off. We're almost into July, and it was snowing not that far from my house today. So, but I love this. Look, as a chubby guy,
global warming.
As a chubby guy, I love being cooled off. You know what I mean?
Like,
oh, my goodness. I don't like getting in my car and having back sweat immediately. Come on. This is good stuff. I like the cool weather. So, we'll enjoy it for a little bit longer. And Scott, I want to jump into something that you brought to my attention. You watched that Netflix documentary, Athlete A, that deals with USA Gymnastics and Larry Nassar and the Carollis and all of the people involved in the scandal of Larry Nassar's sexual abuse over 29 years of being the team doctor for USA Gymnastics. Despicable story. And I remember, I think we would see bits and pieces, I think, from his trial, from the people who were, at his sentencing, telling them victims.
Victim impact statements.
Right. The victim impact statements where all these people would get up to the podium and say their piece to the guy who, you know, essentially in some cases ruined their lives, you know,
right.
Tore families apart, et cetera. And USA Gymnastics covering up for him for so many years. And you came in and you were like, this is such a – we talk all the time on the show about cheating, right?
Right.
We talk so much on the show about how athletes will do anything to win. And
right.
That was the angle, I think, that you were talking about with this documentary about Larry Nassar and these Olympic athletes, their parents, the institution that surrounded them, USA Gymnastics. One, how young they start out, and two, how important it is to win gold medals over – or at least it was – over trying to do the right thing, which was seemingly never done for these girls.
What really stood out to me was everyone. The USA Gymnastics, the parents, the athletes, this Larry Nassar, everyone. And what stood out to me was they all are implicit in this. I mean, I understand these girls are victims. There's no question about it. but they wanted to win at all costs. And they were willing to not say anything, to endure just horrific abuse. Abuse not only from this doctor. I mean, it's horrific what he did. Terrible. And how, but they also suffered this mental and emotional abuse from these coaches, all in the effort to win a round piece of gold medal. That was it, to have their moment of fame, to be recognized as the great, you know, the greatest at whatever they did. And that's a thing in our culture, because I started to think about my experience and I did the same thing. Like, there's so much that I sacrificed, either whether it was the physical abuse that my body went through, whether it was the, like, I didn't have vacations. I gave up everything. I, you know, the amount of effort. I know vacation's not anything compared to this, and I'm not saying it, but the physical aspect that I put my body through, and not only that, but like the emotional abuse. I don't know that you can understand, and no one's going to have sympathy towards this, and I don't expect people to have sympathy towards it, because it was my choice. But the things that I did physically to my body, I pay for today.
Mm-hmm.
The abuse that I took from fans, like I couldn't go out anywhere, and the things that people said to me were awful. And it gets to you.
It's usually met with, yeah, but you're a professional athlete, so right, this just kind of comes into the territory. Kinda,
it's kind of part of the deal.
And we have no clue. The thing I think that's interesting about this is we would have no clue. We don't even think about the USA Gymnastics program until it's the Summer Olympics. You know, every 4 years, right, we'll start to think about it again.
Yeah.
And all we
it's
care about
is
that
one little moment they
right,
have.
And all we look at is are these girls going to win this thing for us? I mean, right, that's what's terrible
that's
about it.
That's all
just
we
like,
care about.
It's an interesting thing, and it makes me – I mean, there's this little part of you that thinks, man, I'm almost like complicit with this because I'm watching this going, USA, let's win gold. Oh, man, that 14-and-a-half-year-old, I can't believe she didn't stick that landing. How dare she? Get her out of here. You know, or this idea of and that their coaches were so abusive to them. You mentioned that about the emotional part of it. And how ruthless things could get. And that was one of the things that stood out, I think, in the documentary as well, is how these coaches just came down big time on these girls on top of the actual sexual abuse that was also going on behind the scenes.
I was sitting in a doctor's room, in the training room, a private room, the door closed,
mm-hmm,
and they were putting a 4-inch needle in my stomach,
mm-hmm,
to numb me, 12 minutes long. And sitting right next to me was Chris Spielman, who is he was an All-American linebacker at Ohio State on the box of Wheaties. You know, he's middle linebacker for the Detroit Lions. And he's sitting there with his torn bicep muscle. This is before a game. This is so you can go play in the game.
They're going to try to get him to play with the torn bicep.
Oh, it wasn't going to try to get
and
him to play.
He's going to try to play with the torn bicep.
They're draining all of the fluid out of his forearm. And I'm sitting here going, you know, this is normal. These are the things that you put your body through. And they did this documentary on Chris, and he goes, look, all I cared about all my life was is winning a Super Bowl. And if you don't win a Super Bowl, it's a failure. And so there's this tremendous pressure. And the crazy thing is that's the same way I felt. And you look at some of these people, like someone like a Dan Marino, and they go, well, you know, he never won the big one. And well, these guys aren't Hall of Famers because, you know, they didn't win a Super Bowl, or they didn't do enough. It wasn't enough. And you feel this pressure. You feel this pressure that you have to exceed at the very highest pinnacle, the very highest level. There's people like Mark Rippon. And they said he was terrible. Like he may be the worst Super Bowl winning quarterback of all time. You know, and it's like, wait, he won the Super Bowl.
Right, right.
But then it would have to be, well, you know, in order for him to really be considered okay, a success, the guy's got to win 3 and 4. And it's just so strange, this perception, this pressure that people put on to excel in these sports, whatever sport it is, but also the internal pressure that we put on ourselves and where and how far we're willing to go, because I'm telling you, Alex, there were years that I mean, I would have the worst sleepless nights. I still have a dream today. I still have the dream. And I feel like even though I played 12 years in the NFL, that my career was a failure. And I feel
What's the dream? What's the dream then?
The dream is I get to go back.
Hold on, lay down for this part. I need you to get on that sofa over there.
The dream is I get to go back, and it's usually either with the Miami Dolphins, Detroit Lions, or at the University of Utah, and I'm so excited to be there, and it's like my first day of school. I'm just I haven't seen my buddies forever.
You can't pick your feet up,
and I can't get myself to practice.
Huh? There's no way to get there. Like, you don't have like a ride or something.
No, I just. What happens is I go to put my equipment on, and it just takes me so long, I'm late.
Right.
And I go out to practice, and I'm just mortified because
I'm already late
for practice, and how dare you be late for practice? It's like blasphemous.
I have dreams all the time about – this is like finals at university. Finals are like abuse, I think, too, because I still have these things where it's like, hey, we went back and we regraded your tests. And it turns out you actually failed and you didn't graduate. I have that all the time. Yeah. Taking the break here. We're going to come back. We've got our 2-minute drill to wrap things up next. Stay with us right here. It is KSL's Unraveling, KSL News Radio. Okay, welcome back. You all right there, Scott? Everything good on your end? Everything okay? You still there?
Huh?
Just making sure. Just making
sure. Oh,
we got
a show going on. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just making sure you're still there.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back. It's another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. And if you miss any portion of the program, you can always go back, download the podcast wherever podcasts are found. Go to KSLSports.com, click on the podcast button. You can find all of our amazing podcasts there, including all the episodes of this program.
Do you have jackets?
What's up?
Like,
what do you mean?
Well, you know, like a...
Like a letter jacket. No,
not a letter jacket. You know, just like a windbreaker kind of jacket.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do you ever like, get a jacket and put it on?
I've put jackets
on,
and
then
yeah.
You fill in the pocket, and there's, like, money in there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like $10, listen, $5.
Let me just tell you right now.
Don't you feel like you've won the lottery
in
that moment?
I'm going to tell you something. I've got to move, all right?
Right.
When my wife finds money, there's no better mood she could be in.
Yeah.
Because she's a finance person.
Oh, so do you
plant money?
You plant money.
For sure.
Oh, what a brilliant idea.
So what I do is I put it's a $10 investment.
You can say listen, this because your wife never listens to the show, right?
I know.
So we can.
Yeah. So there's a $10 investment that I make every, or 10 or 20, if I'm feeling generous, a $20 investment that I'll make. And I'll put 5, 10, 20 bucks in a couple of her coats for the winter. Now in July, I'm going boop, boop, right? And then she puts those winter coats on, you know, when it's December, and she'll go, oh, my gosh, there's $10 in here. And I'll go, what? We should celebrate. Tell me that's not brilliant.
That is brilliant.
See?
That, by far, is the smartest thing I've ever heard you say on this show, ever.
The thing is, you got to – here's the plan. You got to – it's got to be very specific.
Could you come by my house and just drop a few into my jacket?
No, that's the thing is that – like, but you wouldn't appreciate it as much. You'd go, oh, that's pretty fun.
No, I would totally
appreciate listen, it. The way that this works the best is the person has to have a business finance degree, okay? And to kind of live her life in a spreadsheet right. all the time.
So a penny means a lot.
Right. When like I'm opening my phone and I go to like the ESPN app, like it's like automatic. My wife's thing, she opens up and it's those like personal wealth things. She's right. always tracking like bank accounts.
The budgeting
like
software.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And I'm just like, that is okay, good for her. Anyway, so that's just a little tip for you out there, fellas.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You're looking to looking to have some fun in the wintertime? You go, oh, we found $10, huh?
Or if you're in the doghouse, it's a way to get out.
If you're in the doghouse, and it's like, but it's like early October, and it's still kind of warm, and you're like, maybe we should put on a winter jacket. You can't wait that long. Plant money in your clothes. That's how it works. All right. we got to get to that portion of the program. It's the end of the show. That means we got our 2-minute drill to get through here. Scott, explain to the people who may be listening for the first time or need a refresher what the 2-minute drill is?
A refresher. All right. Well, when the game's late, you got to hurry because there's not very much time. You got to go down the field and score quickly. Well, our show, we have a lot to talk about at the end, so we got to hurry to finish the show out right. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things, and we win the show and win the day, and life is good.
And then we're happy.
And you put $10 in my jacket, and you know,
maybe a little bit happier.
I might just smile.
There you go. All right. So, Scotty, first things first, you found a story about a new rule in baseball that could, of all the rules of spitting and no more chewing gum in the ball in the clubhouse, and this one is not a shock because we should have thought about it, but at the same time, this new baseball rule kind of intrigues me. What did you find out here,
buddy? Well, because of social distancing, there's no arguing and there's no brawls. So you cannot brawl in baseball anymore.
No brawling in baseball?
No, there's no brawling anymore.
So the bullpen can't run out from the outfield? And
right. So I just wonder, what if you throw at a player that they just have to go to first base? I mean, that's kind of a free pass.
Right. No, you know what's going to happen is more of this one, Scott. When somebody gets hit with a pitch and then they do the thing where they stare them down as they run down to first, there's going to be a lot of like fake trash talk on this. But the real problem is guys like, well, look, I think the going out and arguing and yelling in the ump's face, that can't happen anymore. They can't do that. So what do? They can't go out and discuss anything with the umpire?
No, they just file a grievance.
That's terrible.
That's what they just say. Hey, I've got an official complaint to the commissioner on you.
Oh, that's boring.
Yeah.
But you know what?
And the umpire says, don't point at me. You can't point at me
make
from
this
the
a
dugout.
Make this a new thing because it will actually speed up the speed of play. Well, I hope.
And if there is a brawl, it's an immediate ejection.
Oh,
so they could eject. Everybody. They could eject the whole team.
Well, so the game. So it
and
could
then
just
the
be
game's
like
just kind of over.
Postponement. You see, you know, in baseball games, going on
brawl,
the summer,
it's brawl delayed.
And you go, oh, I saw they got postponed. Was it a rain delay? No, it was a brawl delay.
It was a brawl delay.
Everybody got suspended for a couple days.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, like, after the Brewers and the White Sox fight, 19 players have come down with COVID from yelling at each other right in each other's faces. Ridiculous. What else we got here on the 2-minute drill here, Scott? There was a couple of other things I know that you wanted to get into, but I'm trying to figure out if Cam Newton. We forgot to talk about Cam Newton.
Cam Newton
with the New England Patriots, and it's not a giant chunk of change, but if he performs well, heavily laden with incentives, so he's going to get $1 million base salary from the Patriots. Is this a great move by the Pats? Like, brilliant in terms of, like, hey, we didn't have to pay a lot to get a former MVP to be the... And is he the starting quarterback? That's the question.
I would think he would have... I don't know why he wouldn't be, unless they just see these... These other two guys are just...
They got Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer,
They're placeholders, yeah. The problem with Cam Newton is his health. He's just not been healthy for the last 2 years. And, well, then there's the... The wardrobe situation.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he may...
Tom Brady wore some, like... You know, he wore some, like, I'm too cool for everybody clothes, too, so it's fine.
If Cam Newton can learn to play the game like Tom Brady, in that... And this was a statement I heard when I was really young, live to play another down. Like, it's not your job to go in and bang heads with people, and Cam Newton has been a guy that's... been rough and tumble, and he's paying for it now. And you do. It just shortened your lifespan. And so maybe Cam Newton figuring out that if I'm just a little less, you know, aggressive in certain situations and I learn to play a little bit more like Tom Brady, I might be in a better situation. The challenging thing, though, is I don't know how many weapons they have in New England, and he may have to run anyways. So,
Man.
But
I like the pickup. I don't hate the...
Yeah,
I don't hate the Patriots nearly as much as I used to because my son likes him so much, and I don't hate this. I never hated Cam Newton either. I like him better in this role, I think, than I did when he was at the. This is a massive move for him. If you're him, you should be really excited, right? You're going to a team that wins.
What could be scary is Cam Newton comes in and he's like, "Well, this just looks like Tom Brady," and then you start to go, "Well, was it Belichick in the system,
or
you know?" And so it could start, you know, possibly minimizing. Or I don't want to use tarnishing, but maybe diminishing to some degree Tom Brady's legacy. Or it could enhance it. A lot depends on how Cam Newton plays.
Speaking of Tom Brady's legacy and the Patriots' legacy, the Spygate scandals and things like that have gotten even worse because last year, and this is one of those victims of COVID like where we forgot about it, because the league started investigating in January the Patriots filming the sidelines, aggressively filming the Bengals sidelines during advanced scouting of the week before, and they got totally busted up in the press box filming just signals coming in and out from the defense.
And just people in, like, position groups coming on and off the field.
Yes, had nothing to do with
getting a feel for personnel and all that stuff.
It was less about, and well, one, did you feel like that was, that's way out of line? And number two, the excuse of, well, this is just what you do when you're scouting. This was cheating again. Now, the Patriots got hit with over a $1 million fine again. They've lost a draft pick for next year in the third round of the draft. That's kind of the price that Bill Belichick has paid over the years of just like, hey, so, I'll get caught and we'll still win.
But the thing that used to happen in my day is they would film the sideline to film the signals, because they manually with, you know, like,
right, yeah,
you know, would, and now it's all through a headset. So you ask yourself, well, why is the big deal? The big deal is seeing personnel groups go in. So if personnel groups go in and this happens, it just gives you an advantage. You kind of know, because when you get film from another team, all you see is the play.
Right.
You don't see how who comes on and who goes off the field. You just watch the play. This is just one of those. It's like one of those little added incentives, because you want to think, well, why is this stealing signs in baseball? Why is this coach bringing this guy in?
Right.
What's the significance of, and what do they do in this situation? And if you see that happen, because you wouldn't see it from the film you get
when you're
from
used
other
to
teams,
watching it, though,
and you go, oh, okay, you got to be aware of this when this guy comes in.
I love it. The cheating continues in the NFL. Thank you, New England Patriots. We'll take the break here. We'll come back tomorrow for another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. We'll see you then, everybody.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.